I probably should apologize for the title that I use. I certainly did not want to have anybody to take an offense by it. I merely wanted to use the movie to help illustrate the subject matter. So I apologize if I have offended some.
I'm deeply offended.
Well, it's not really all that funny because there are some people who took an offense to it, and I'm sorry. I won't expound.
Okay, but it is something to know about, I think.
I'm going to read the scripture. It is from Mark 9, 14 through 29. When they came to the other disciples, they saw a large group around them and the teachers of the law arguing with them. As soon as all the people saw Jesus, they came overwhelmed with wonder and ran to greet him. "What are you arguing with him about?" he asked. A man in the crowd answered, "Teacher, I brought you my son, who is possessed by a spirit that has robbed him of speech. Whenever it seizes him, it throws him on the ground. He foams at the mouth, gnashes his teeth, and becomes rigid. I asked your disciples to drive out the spirit, but they could not." "You unbelieving generation," Jesus replied, "how long shall I stay with you? How long shall I put up with you? Bring the boy to me." So they brought him. And when the spirit saw Jesus, it immediately threw the boy into convulsions. He fell to the ground and rolled around and foamed at the mouth. Jesus asked the boy's father, "How long has he been like this?" "From childhood," he answered. "It has often thrown him into fire or water to kill him. But if you can do anything, take pity on us and help us." "If you can," Jesus asked, "everything is possible for one who believes." Immediately the boy's father exclaimed, "I do believe. Please help me overcome my unbelief." When Jesus saw that a crowd was running to the scene, he rebuked the impure spirit. You deaf and mute spirit, he said, "I command you, come out of him and never enter him again." The spirit shrieked, convulsed him violently, and came out. The boy looked so much like a corpse that many said he was dead. But Jesus took him by the hand and lifted him up to his feet, and he stood up. After Jesus had gone indoors, his disciples asked him privately, why couldn't we drive it out? And he replied, "This kind comes out only by prayer." Or down at the bottom is a note, prayer and fasting. I have asked last Sunday that I was, suggested that to watch the movie called The Exorcism of Emily Rose. Some of you have watched it, some of you haven't. The Carol has basically printed a plot to the movie, and it is a movie about an exorcism that has gone bad, and she dies in the process. And so the movie is about two lawyers who are defending both the people and the Catholic Church. And the two lawyers, mostly it's about faith. I see the movie as about faith. Two different people having two different kinds of faith, and prosecuting an individual, or in this case, Emily Rose, in the movie, and not really clearly understanding each one. There was a Methodist minister who was also a lawyer, or a Methodist person, church person, who was one lawyer, Ethan Thomas. And then there was another lawyer who was a woman who was agnostic. And that agnostic person is says, I don't know what I believe. I can sum it up kind of in that way. Don't disbelieve God. There's a God, but don't believe a God necessarily. And these two go and represent the priest, Father Moore. And throughout the process, what you would have thought would have happened, or the person who would have had the most faith would have been the Methodist lawyer, turned out that he did not. And the one who believed the least, the lawyer who was an agnostic, turned out to really not necessarily believe, but it certainly has changed her life in a big way. And in the end, the priest, Father Moore, gets charged with being involuntary manslaughter, I think is what the charge was. And but the jury, he wanted to be charged immediately if he was found guilty. And so the jury recommended time served. So he was guilty, but left go free. And so that's the summation of the movie. You can read it. I found it to be, I actually watched it twice, once out on the road and once with Colleen at home. I've watched it before. I saw similarities between that movie and this passage. But I'm not really sure what I believe when it comes to this matter. I have to be truthful. I don't really know. I can't say science, as in this case in this movie, was able to give an understanding of everything that happened. But at the same time, I cannot say that the spiritual realm or the religious world has all the answers either in this case. Was Emily possessed or was she mentally ill? This was the big question throughout the movie. We'll get to a point where I want some input here later, but I'm going to say a few things first. To say that science or the spiritual world is exclusive of one another, has all the answers, is kind of short-sighted. I can't say that science has all the answers today, and I can't say that the spiritual realm gives all the answers to us in this reality. So the question I want to ask in this beginning is, where is the information contained in words and in sentences? If I say, set here, where is the information contained? In the letters? In the spaces in between? If you say, through the voice given to it, where is the information contained? Is there a spirit that engulfs these words in these sentences? And through words, letters, and the spaces in between, there lives a spirit of information in these words. I can use my hand and say, nonverbal expression. You get the same thing. Where is the information? In meaning, come here, sit there. Where is the information contained? Where is the power in the words? Wherein does it contain? You may say it's in the hand gestures or it's in the words. They have meanings. But I will ask you this. A blinking light, what does it mean? It takes on multiple meanings. It depends on the color. It depends on if there's one or two. And it depends on the place in which it's positioned. On the front of my truck, I have yellow blinking lights. That indicates to people, when they look at it, according to the law, that that is the front of the truck. If that light is blinking on the back and it's red, then it means that it is the back of the truck. And it indicates that I'm turning right or left. What happens if they both are blinking? That means I'm either going slow or I'm on the side of the road. What happens if you put two lights, red lights together and they're oscillating? That means it's a railroad track. So a blinking light takes on a multiple meanings. It's not just the same thing. Everything seems to be really complex. Things are just not one simple definition. And so it is with the movie. The movie, and in this passage, is not a simple answer that can be given. Some would say that the illustration was that it was a healing, or it was about faith. Traditionally, the passage means meaning has about faith. Person didn't have the disciples didn't have enough of faith to drive out the demon. That's a traditional way of looking at it. I'm not sure that's the only way. Things are very very complex. What makes us accept something other than something here and not this? What makes us decide which way we're going to go? What drives us one way or the other? Science doesn't really have an answer to that, Dan.
I think in this situation, you mean, what's the words mean to the demon that's in person?
What do the words mean?
You know, like it's not so much the words, it's the person that's saying them.
Okay, so there's an added dimension to voicing them and speaking them in the way you speak them and how you speak them and the emphasis you put on them.
Yeah, it's the person saying it means as much as what words are.
That is true. So there's another dimension. That's the point. There's another dimension to words and language, signs, and what have you. It's not just a simple, well, that's what it means. It's more complex. So if I say, come here and sit down. That's a really hard directive. I say, well, come here and sit down. So I can use them words in multiple ways to mean multiple things by simply the projection of my voice. The spirit of my voice is added to it, the words, and it is projected into the language, and therefore there's an added understanding to it. So it adds to the complexity of the issue. It's not just as simple as A or B. We'll start with God. God is more complex, I think, than simply one being. I've said here from this pulpit that I believe that there's a hierarchy of angels and various different beings that exist in this heavenly realm. Principalities, powers in the heavenly realms, Paul talks about. So can we simply say God is simply one being sitting up there somewhere? No. God becomes more complex. The word God has more complexity to it than simply seeing it as one being. I think if you understand God as being the heavens and God as being a hierarchy with angels, you can begin to understand a little bit more that maybe demons exist in this realm. Now, I'll define demons a little bit later, in a minute or two. So if you expand your understanding of what God is, or our perception of what God is, you will allow more complexity to come in, and rather than saying a blinking light only means one thing. Now God starts meaning multiple things. It's more vaster and more bigger of a picture. Becomes more complex. I'll ask this question. What is beyond God? What is beyond my understanding of God? Have you ever contemplated that idea? Jesus says that, or Paul quotes him, or it's in the New Testament, that Jesus takes a name above all names. Beyond names, I have no idea what that can be like. Is that simply a spiritual reality in which no physical matter exists, in which you understand through nonverbal language, in which we understand in a whole different way? A place where there's just spirit. But my small mind can't understand that. I don't understand that. I can't. I can maybe have a little bit of idea, but really not very much. I really can't understand the spiritual realm really in very great depth. Not really.
Is there somebody who really can?
No. I don't think so.
I don't either.
So, for me, to look at both this passage of Scripture and the movie and simply say, it's science, Emily Rose had a mental illness, or this person, this boy, had a mental illness, and that's all it was, I think it's short-sighted. Is the fact that they couldn't, the lack of faith, because the father said, help me with my unbelief. He couldn't understand. I don't understand either. But yet I don't throw it out. The possibility of Emily Rose and the story, the actual story of Emily Rose, that she was possessed. Or that spirits can possess human beings. The Jewish thought is that letters contain a spirit. Every letter contains a spirit. You connect them letters together in a word, it becomes a larger spirit. You connect them in a sentence, it becomes a larger sentence yet, and an idea becomes larger and larger. And thus, you have the spirit of the word, or the spirit within the word, that's developed in a Jewish thought. The idea that demons or demons were always seen as bad is not necessarily true. The Greeks started out and they saw them as not being bad. But through time, we have equated them as being only the workers of the devil or Lucifer. I think in some respects, angels and demons and the hierarchy, there are many beings, spiritual beings, that do the work of God and all that mystery we don't understand. The movie to me was not a horror movie. Some of you have watched it. I think the movie was about faith and belief. Just like this passage is also about faith and belief. Do we believe in disembodied spirits? Or have we simply put the lid on it and said, no, we're not going to go there? Do we allow ourselves the imagination or the spirit direction to delve into it and say, is it possible? The female lawyer used that in the summation of the trial. She didn't know. She wasn't sure, but she said, is it possible? Is it possible? And I believe that we have to ask ourselves that same question. Is it possible? Or do we just simply argue everything away? What did you think and see in the movie? Does anybody want to comment?
I think it meant different. Everybody takes a different outlook on it. Well, takes something different away from it.
What did you see?
Well, I believed in a certain amount to start with, and this kind of made me believe a little bit more.
Right. And this, what I have heard and what my research was that full-blown possessions do not happen very often. They're not a something of the norm. Now, I don't want to go to the side of the Word of Faith movement and the charismatic movement to say that everything is a demon. And, you know, if you have a problem, whatever it is, emotional problem, a sickness, that is a curse and a demon that's possessing you, and you can cast that out. I think that, for me, that's going too far. Is there a spiritual connection to all of that? Probably so. But I do believe that medicine plays a part in the spiritual wholeness of in a spiritual reality in part of healing everybody to get, you know, that's a part of the wholeness of healing somebody. So medicine, the way I understand, I have heart disease. So my cardiologist tells me that we're never going to cure you with all the medicine that we give you. We can't cure you. The only thing we can do is slow it down. So that's not the actual thing that kills you. We want something else to kill you. And so I see modern medicine a lot in that way. It doesn't cure us. It simply slows whatever we have down so something else will get us, because death in the end is going to get us, whether we like it or not. So, anybody else have something they want to share? Surely somebody.
The process has a bad name because it's looked at as like witchcraft.
The process has a bad name.
Yeah, it's looked at as witchcraft.
Yes.
And I learned a lot looking it up. Most every religious tradition has some form of this process in it, done
right.
Differently.
Right.
But it's there. It's part of where people go. The western part of the world kind of threw it out after the 18th century until the 1970s or so. And it was reintroduced by a popular movie. You can argue how well it was reintroduced, but nevertheless.
Well, in the Exorcism movie, yes. That was the first of a series.
But the interesting thing was people that have turned to exorcism again have gone because modern medicine seems to not have given them satisfaction. It's an alternative route. It's not, and so what we know most about is the process used by the Catholic Church. And they have an exorcism team with trained exorcists and a medical doctor who is supposed to, and that was shown in the
right, it was.
Is supposed to help determine whether it is a condition, medical condition, that requires treatment. Now, you know, where I get into some article in the movie is it would appear that the church exorcist concurred or talked the family into discontinuing the meds.
That they what?
It appears from the movie that the church exorcist talked the family into discontinuing the epilepsy meds.
Oh, discontinuing them.
Yeah.
Yes, that is
and
true.
I would argue with that because from reading it would appear that it's a team operation and it would not have been the decision of the church exorcist. It would have to have been a recommendation of the medical part and the spiritual part.
What did you take from the person, the woman who represented the exorcism and kind of said that the medicine may have trapped her in that?
We don't know. Because
we don't.
Different people react differently
yes.
to different meds. I had an uncle that was given a med that turned him to death within 24 hours.
A reaction.
And, somebody else would take it and, you can't throw it off the market because it happened to him because that's the way the system responded.
So statistically, that's how medicine works. It affected so many people negatively that it's low enough where they can say that the medicine works.
Because there's the other 90-some percent that
are yes.
So you're left with questions.
You are.
But
a lot of questions.
You can't. All right, here goes my heresy, folks. I see religion as man's attempt to answer questions they can't answer in any other way.
That is true.
And most people want answers to a situation so they can say it's yay or nay. This leaves you in that gray area of not knowing. And I think that's what religion has worked on for all these centuries, and I don't see see any difference, because I see down the road there may be an answer, and this may, you know, it may make sense. Just as it appears the biblical story is talking about what we call epilepsy.
Yes.
That we have a great deal more knowledge of and a great deal larger ability to treat. But I also know of some people that went through a lot of different treatments before their condition was under control.
Yes.
And so at some point in that process, if you were in that process and the process wasn't as wide as it is now, this may have been where you went.
But also, can you exclude a person who has epilepsy that maybe also that person also could, who is possessed, shows the same symptoms? So you can't rule out the fact that.
So how do you peel it off?
Yeah. It is very common. And that's really where I want to. The answer is not definitive. You are right, Carol. Traditional religion wants to box it up and say, this is the answer, accept this, and that's it. I'm sorry, religious faith is not that easy. It is not. Your personal faith and my personal faith is not in a box. It's immense, changing, growing, fluctuating, expanding, contracting, doubting. It's doing all these things constantly, at least it should, in order to what we call growth, or what the Bible calls growth. So faith, hope, is not about actually knowing. It's merely believing in the possibility of. I see that as. Even Paul says that. If I have faith, say coming over, I had faith that Colleen and I were going to make it here safely. All the way over here, faith was in operation. Once I got here, faith was not needed. We were here. And that's Paul's example. So there's always that mystery, that variable in your faith and hope. Always. You're never arrived. So there is a mystery. And I definitely agree that Western, especially Western religions, want to have an answer, a definitive answer, that it's this way and that's it. Where a lot of the Eastern and Middle Eastern are happy with not really making sense, but simply saying, okay. They're much more open to the idea of not everything has to be linear or logical all the way out. That's a Western idea. I agree with that. Absolutely. What did you see? What do you think? When you had a lot of things to say before service.
From what I saw, and this comes from prior knowledge of, you know, technology and that kind of stuff.
People in the back can't hear you.
Yeah, turn around and yeah. So you can hear you.
And this is just based off of my prior knowledge to this kind of stuff. Being an ex-Catholic, you know, it is Catholics think that this is their right. No other church can really perform exorcisms. That's why you have to go through training through the Vatican and through studying and practicing. Demons have a way of sneaking in it, and in mental health, people talk about that it's their demons, that they're fighting their demons.
Yes.
So I do think that demons have a grip on the mental health. And as far as the true story, the actual person that this story is based off of struggled with depression and emptiness and epilepsy. And a lot of those things, when a soul is broken, it makes demons easier to attach themselves to you. So I personally think that maybe it was a case of demonic possession, quote unquote, that just, it was just unable to sorry, I lost my train of thought.
That the priests were unable to exorcise.
Yes, that it was just a failed exorcism on their part. Because she didn't know how herself to get better. So I don't I think like the actual ruling was probably inaccurate, like the negligent homicide, because she starved herself. It wasn't like they forced, because you can't really force someone to do something that they don't want to do. And that was their point in the story too.
Right.
But I personally believe in demonic possession and that it is a real thing and that people struggle daily with it.
Well, it talks about some Western thought.
Yeah.
The research said they had had, what was it, 67?
Yes.
Exorcism.
Yeah.
Right.
Sessions. And traditionally, they look at least 22 to be successful.
I was going to ask you that because you were going to research that. How many were successful? 22?
I don't know how many. I never got an actual number because they gave you a variety of cases. And
each case is different.
Without, because some of them supposedly were cured for 2 or 3 years and then they'd have a relapse. But they did say that in most cases, to be what they considered a level of acceptability, probably took 22 sessions.
Since what year?
The average.
Since one year?
This was modern.
Modern times.
Modern times.
Yes.
Thought.
Yeah.
Which something that occurred to me, and I don't know, I don't have any proof of this except my own thoughts, that in recent years, psychiatry has gone to a chemical base, take a pill. And if indeed you go back to Freudian psychology, where you have to work your way through and see the base for your problem and work your way through, and I know someone that has done this for years and periodically has a relapse, but has really come to realize what she has to do to be mentally healthy, and it's a continuous process. It doesn't happen overnight. Now that you go in and have 6 sessions and take your pills, I'm not sure the pendulum didn't go flying. You know, 35 years of analysis is one thing, and that may have gone too far one way, but I'm not sure the pill approach hasn't gone too far the other way.
I think the pill approach has gone too far. I tend to agree with you.
I think the pill approach coincides somewhat with the exorcism movie, and that if the pill approach isn't working and this is what they say is going to work and it isn't, maybe they're, you know, maybe this is an alternative that is appealing when you're kind of desperate.
I think disease can be seen as a spirit dwelling you in some respects, but not all times. I agree with what you said, that you should maybe try the modern medicine, but if that doesn't work, maybe in combination with a priest or a, you know, spiritual reality to try to help you relieve your also. I'm totally convinced that the pill approach is not the only answer. That doesn't solve the issue.
I was very intrigued by finding that M. Scott Peck, who was a very accepted in the 80s, 90s period theologian and psychiatrist, or psychologist, one or the other, tended to believe in exorcism and demonic and the possibility of demonic possession. Now, he took a lot of heat from saying that publicly.
And he would.
Some of his writings. But he was a, you know, he was a well thought of popular author in the world of spirituality, theology, etc. in the 90s. And, you know, he took the heat for it by saying he did.
At the same time, I don't want to flip over to the whole side of where everything is a demonic possession if you have an illness. Again, like the Word of Faith movement and the Charismatic movement. I don't want to go that far. I don't want to go that far. I think it's in combination of. And that's the problem with us as humans. We want to go one way or the other, and that's what we want to hang on to and unhold it up, where it's not that simple, as we are discussing. It's not that simple. Dan, you had something you wanted to say.
Sorry.
I see the scene in the movie at the end when the female lawyer made her final statements, and she used the word "I don't know" or something close to this, but is it possible? I think we as a people of faith should open ourselves up to the fact that, and ask that question, is it possible? Why should we slam the door on something that we don't know? Why do we do that? Out of fear? Out of fear that we might understand something? I will tell you that I don't like darkness. I'm afraid of the dark. I don't like walking outside in the dark. I've always been that way. And I don't know what that is, but I don't like darkness. I have to have a flashlight or something, or I can get kind of, you know.
I think everybody's a little bit that way.
I think so, but I mean, I just don't care for darkness at all, period. I can imagine and hear things, and my imagination runs away with me pretty fast. So I don't want to say that people imagine things and make things, and thus they create the world of their mental illness or their state of mind. Because I could very much, if I lived in the dark, I would get used to it and it would be okay. But my imagination can run away quite. So I liked the part in which the woman lawyer, who always at the end said, but gave room for possibility. Where I saw the more traditional person who thought traditionally, the man who thought traditionally, didn't allow for no room, none. And another thing I liked is the sentence. I can relate this to the Bible very, very well. You are guilty, but you get to go free. Isn't that a biblical principle? Us as human beings, isn't what Jesus said? Isn't that part of salvation, that we are guilty as human beings, but we are free? We are free. Isn't that what Jesus did to us? We are guilty, but we are set free through forgiveness, grace, and mercy. I think that's a very good analogy of salvation. On the tombstone of Emily Rose, or what is thought to be Emily Rose, was to continue to work out your salvation with fear and trembling. And that Paul said them words. I think that really sums up everything here, that we to work out our salvation and what we understand and what we believe with fear and trembling. Not fear to the point where we're afraid, where it freezes us and makes us stand still, but fear out of respect for the unknown. We have to have a certain amount of respect for the unknown. And trembling, and meaning that, you know, reverence. We should be respectful of that which we don't know. But yet continue to delve in and to look and into it. And one of the things that the priest said in the end, if he was asked whether or not he was going to go back to his parish, and he said no. He said he looked in the darkness and he couldn't go no more. That was it. He was done. He went and lived as a recluse, as far as I know, and he looked into the eyes of darkness and didn't. That was it. He was changed too. And the female lawyer, again, I will say, was definitely changed along the way. And is there anything else that someone would like to share? I think I'll close with the statement, we are all guilty as humans, but we are free to go. We are free to pass this reality into the next. Through forgiveness, grace, and mercy. And that I'm going to hang on to. Amen.
Amen.